from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Around the skyline, that's when you know development is happening.
Thanks to our guests today, Annie Costable, James Nouveau, James Feegan. And to our producers, Ray Diaz, Adam Studzinski, Brandon Fryer, Connor O'Donnell, Kevin Lapka. Do we have to thank Peter Hansen, or is he now?
No, he's on the afternoon show.
That was 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That was a fast 2 weeks.
I know. Peter Hansen is now with the afternoon show.
Wow. Now he's going to really get a taste of radio internecine culture. He's going to really like it now. Now he's going to look around and go, why are they always yelling at each other?
Sorry, I only got 610 on the SAT verbal. Help me on internecine.
It usually means...
That was a very Duke word you used.
Family member versus family member.
Ah, okay.
I'm not familiar with the terminology.
I thought maybe it meant something about, you know, actually working on a radio show and giving him tasks that might come in handy in his future.
Wow.
I thought that's what internecine might mean in that context.
Wait, hold on. I mean, cutting audio, that's beneficial, cutting audio.
That's good.
I don't even know what we had him doing. We had him
podcast.
He would sit in on meetings.
And he would give us a topic idea.
Good.
Yeah, we would ask or say, what are you and your friends talking about in your group chat?
He was running social media. He was doing all the essentials.
I was just lashing out irrationally, which is part of my brand.
You know what?
Yes,
that's accurate. That's accurate. No arguments here. No notes.
That's the voice of Marshall Harris. Hi.
Hello, gentlemen. Hope you had a lovely weekend.
I did.
Yeah. You survived the 95 or so on Saturday?
Yeah. I went and saw Roy Wood Jr.
Man,
Saturday.
It was good to see you there, Lawrence. Lawrence, it was good to see you. That was a really fun night. Roy is great.
He was really, really great. I was very excited. My guy Felonious opened for him, and Felonious was outstanding.
I thought I had never seen him before. I know of him. Felonious Monk, M-U-N-K, as opposed to Felonious Monk. Yes. But yeah, I mean, he was great.
He was really terrific and got a chance to like chop it up with him afterwards and talk comedy. Cause I was joking with him. There's a show called Southside. Your guy was in Southside from Top Gun. Bashir.
Oh, he's Salahuddin. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's awesome.
So there was a scene where Felonious plays a criminal with some information, and the way that they get him to give up the information is they pull in his PS5 and they start deleting. Exactly. Exactly.
That is a cardinal sin.
Exactly.
I would cave so fast.
And so did he. So I was talking.
Deleting what? Deleting games?
Like
your game
your progress.
Like, yeah.
Oh, okay.
So I was talking to him about the scene because it was one of the funniest on what was one of the funniest shows around. And he was like, what we used. He's like, I did 50 takes. Like there was all sorts of different reactions that he did. And so, and it was funny because he was joking in his act about Doritos.
Yeah.
And he grabs a bag of Doritos and just like, ah! And squeezes it when it's deleted. But he was really great and the energy was great. Roy was fantastic. And we got a chance to like hang out with him after the show.
Roy was super gracious, taking pictures with everybody, talking about everybody, and talking with everybody.
Sharing
some stories.
All speaks. I don't know if I told you this because we were all, I think you and Christine had left at that point. I got a picture of Ray because I took some candids. I got a picture of Ray when Roy told us the story that he told.
Oh, really?
I got a reaction shot of Ray being like, yeah, oh my good stuff. God.
Because Roy was down at Rickwood, was heavily involved with that game and the minor league game on Tuesday. So I had some stories from behind the scenes. I texted the clip to Roy, and Studs has it here. I realized what his delivery as a stand-up comic sometimes reminds me of, and it's Ossie Davis in Do the Right Thing, when, because he would go.
Where is my Miller High Life?
Here it is. Here it is.
Where is the Miller High Life?
No more High Life.
Oh, what kind of a joint is this? How come no more High Life?
If I want to put on a blue shirt, I should be able to put on a blue shirt if I want a blue shirt. But they don't do that. The Crips get in your face. Yeah, what hood you claiming, boy? What hood you, sir? I'm claiming adulthood, okay?
But you asking a lot to make a man change his beard. You asking a lot, doctor.
Even if I am a Crip, obviously I'm a supervisor. You're out of line. I will write your ass up.
So Teddy put those two together.
It's pretty good.
But when Roy, nice. When Roy explodes in anger, it took me to, you asking a lot to make a man change his beer. And I sent it to Roy, and he's like, oh, that's spot on, that's spot on.
His joke about being put to work at the self-checkout, I was dying laughing because literally Saturday morning, like part of my Saturday morning was, I'm going to Lowe's. The Lowe's in Chatham on 83rd. And I couldn't have been happier. Because the thing about Lowe's is that they actually give you the gun, so you get to...
You get to do the scan.
And I was like, doo-doo-doo-doo-doo, like having a great... I brought in my own bag, and when he was telling the joke, I was sitting there going, oh my God, I work for Lowe's. I didn't even take one of their bags. Like, I brought in my own bag.
I liked the bit about when you are caught in a city behind a protest... That you agree with, and just like how frustrating it is, but you don't, you're like, well, they have a right to protest. It's like, there should be an ally lane that you
can just go right through.
The ally lane, so you can go ahead.
That has
and drive
happened many,
right
many times to me, so I get it.
Oh my God. But it was very fun to be out and about, that's for sure.
So, Marshall, what did you think of the Rick Wood experience?
So, I only watched like parts of the pregame stuff and everything, but like, I was mad I couldn't be there. I was like, I looked up flights. I was like, man, getting flight ticket, hotel. I was like, it's probably a bit much. But I found myself free on Thursday evening, and I just couldn't get there. But I'm so happy that they celebrated. Obviously, everybody's seen the Reggie Jackson stuff. Because, like, people, it always amazes me. Like, my parents were literally in school when they desegregated the schools in Alabama, right? But people really do try to act like this was so long ago. That's the thing. And
yesterday.
It's like, and I'm like, bruh, in the timeline of, you know, they just had the judges say they couldn't do anything about the Tulsa stuff, right? Where they're trying to get some type of retribution. And like, there's living victims, like not sons and daughters, but like people who suffered from the practices. If you look at something like redlining, like that's still going on today. Like it's wild.
In the discussion that we had about it, and I put our clip on back out on Twitter after we did the segment about what Reggie said, and there were obviously the bots and the trolls came out, but there's some really interesting comments and reactions to it. And someone was saying like he grew up in Cicero, or she grew up in Cicero, and was only relatively recently made aware of the Cicero race riot. And think about that. I will say this too, that I didn't know my hometown's ugly racial history until much later. They didn't teach it.
Yes.
I didn't know in Deerfield, Illinois, where James Baldwin came in for when there were you know, this tiny little suburb, and there were all kinds of issues about low income housing and who was going to live there, and it was really gross. I didn't know anything about it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I appreciated, had Lawrence on Hit and Run yesterday, and we talked about some of that, and also wanted to talk about Dick Allen, and I know how passionate he is about Dick Allen. But I've been thinking back to, like, when I was working with Jason Goff, and he was clearly bothered by being cast as the angry black man who was talking about things that he was passionate about, and... There were times when he didn't want to, but felt like it was a duty to at the same time. But I kept thinking, not necessarily about him, but just about the trap of like, am I supposed to talk about this because I'm passionate about it? But then if I do,
a race card.
Yeah. And then you're going to cast me as that. And Lawrence, that little paragraph I found from Dick Allen's memoir that I shared with you yesterday hasn't left my head all day. I wonder how good I could have been. It could have been a joy, a celebration, my career. Instead, I played angry. I was labeled an outlaw, and after a while, that's what I became. And it's like, oh man, that hurts to have your identity kind of defined for you along the way. And then you just kind of throw up your hands and there you are.
And what I told Spiegs was, I worry about that for Angel Reese.
Yeah, it's got a very timely backdrop.
Very direct comparison, like public perception, how you handle it, how you either embrace it or fight it or throw your hands up and say, if that's what y'all want me to be. I mean, she's on the record saying,
to some people,
because she understands no matter what.
But she doesn't have to be.
But there's money and fame and ease to that, and it can feel alluring on some level, I'm sure, when you're in the midst of it.
Unfortunately.
Plus, you get pissed off about the situation or about other things, and it's like, oh, there's a way to channel it and just go ahead.
Unfortunately, there's a very WWE-type mentality that a lot of people have towards everything and not just wrestling. And that's where people get caught up, like Angel Reese, in kind of the mix of that.
Yeah, for sure.
And I just look at the impact that she clearly has. Like, people are excited to see her. And it's like, you're allowed to, you can be the hero too. Like, you're allowed.
She was yesterday on the court.
Yes, she was.
She was a badass on the court. All right, quick gear switch here. Question for you guys.
Yeah?
Who is the best player in the National League Central by Fangraphs War? According to Fangraphs War, who's the best player on any team in the National League Central? Hint, it's not a Cub.
Well, thank you for that clarification.
Yeah, I know.
Position player?
It's not David Eckstein. It is position player, yes.
Are you saying among position players?
Among position players.
Is it a Brewer?
It is a Brewer.
Willie Adames?
It's Willie Adames. Yeah. Not William Contreras. It's Bryce Terang by Baseball Reference War, but it's Willie Adames by Fangraphs War. That dude is freaking great.
Where are the...
And just a stud as a leader... And just a personality, that's a big part of their DNA, man.
Where's Ellie De La Cruz?
I don't know. I'll look, but I was surprised.
That wasn't one of my guesses.
Because usually, you know, shortstop, you're going to get the positional boost.
With all those steals.
Yeah, I think, here's a better question.
Why isn't there a Cub there?
There's, yeah, not close.
How far down? Do you know how far down the list you got to get a Cub?
I can look. Talk amongst yourselves. I'm on it.
I feel like that's the bigger problem is that you know you can start that list and start going down that list, and it's going to be a minute before you hit a Cub.
Before we get to Michael Bush or Mike Tauchman.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's problematic.
I was thinking about this morning where if I'm a contending team, I might want to have a conversation with you about Mike Tauchman. You know what I'm saying? Like that's an older veteran player that's not in your plans going forward. He's a really good outfielder. He gives
Alex Caruso.
Fine.
Ooh, I like that comparison.
Fine, but if I'm a team that has any in turning the Cubs from buyers into sellers, that's someone that I would have a conversation with them about.
As of this morning, Ellie De La Cruz is now pulled ahead of Willie Adames, 3.1-3.
Okay.
3.1 to 3, so it was
Thanks
Adames.
For messing up your bit, Speed.
Yeah, I know. You know, blame Poznanski.
But I appreciate the update.
Yeah, right? Joey Ortiz is up there, another Brewer. Then Contreras and Bryce Terang. Michael Bush is the Cub at number 25.
Number 25.
In the division.
That's the tell right
no,
there.
No, it's 25 in the National League. 25 in the National League.
Oh, okay.
So I'm just scanning by National League.
Okay, that's better.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, don't worry. The White Sox will see a couple of those guys that are near the top of that list this week. They'll see a couple of those guys.
Yeah, how's that going to go?
Camelback Bedfellows.
Yeah.
That's my favorite.
And members of Camelback Bedfellows.
It's like some of the scenes from spring training. It's like, oh, look, there's the crowd for a Dodgers game. And the next day, there's the crowd for a White Sox game.
Are you saying they're not similar in size? Or
in anything. Really?
Mm-mm.
Excitement levels?
Yeah. But Eloy Jimenez is fine.
Oh, my God.
Oh, man.
He's in the lineup today.
Is he really?
Yes, he is.
Yeah.
So they're just desperately hoping he homers like 6 times in a week and somebody takes a flyer.
I don't know how he's going to get around the bases on a homer.
He's still got to jog around the bases. It's so bad.
Oh.
Hey, before we let you go or you let us go, I did a bit today. My ride or die 20-year plus fishing pole is finally done.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was demoted to the second spot, but we're just talking about, like, because you know I'm not a sentimentalist. Do you have a piece of sports equipment, specifically sports equipment, that either is just outdated, the tech change, you can't really use it anymore, but you didn't get rid of it because you can't. You can't bring yourself to get rid of it.
See, the first thing I think of is I made a box for my Matchbox cars with my grandfather in 1976, and I still have that, even though like 1.5 sides have fallen off. So, but that's not really sports equipment.
So it sort
equipment,
of ceased
no.
to be a box.
It's no longer a box.
there's all sorts of room for that.
Yes.
You know, the toys, the right. collecting, yeah. all of that.
But I mean, especially like, because sports equipment is designed to be obsoleted.
Yeah. No,
now, people don't say, boy, maybe a putter.
I had like, a catcher's mitt.
I have a baseball glove that I clearly could not use because, one, I don't play baseball anymore. Also, it's falling apart. Like, every time you got to retie everything, it's very much done. Okay. But I haven't gotten rid of it because I'm like...
I inherited my dad's bowling ball from the late 50s, and I took that around from home to home for a few decades. Just recently, I hadn't used it.
Oh, you just recently got rid of it?
Yeah, I hadn't used it in like 20 years, and my wife's like, why are we keeping this bowling ball? Look at the cool-ass leather bag! It's got his name monogrammed.
I have a bowling ball, and I use it once every 2 to 3 years.
Could there be a heavier and more useless thing.
It's bad.
And obsoleted by tech.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. No.
Right. Not
this bowling ball is from when I was in high school. So it's 30 years old.
Yikes.
It's 30 years old. But I use it once every 3 years or so.
So what are you doing with it?
I don't know. There are all sorts of really good ideas.
You should frame it on the wall like
today. I may just keep it in the garage. It doesn't take up much space.
Sure, and you can just look at it every once in a while.
Well, also, I like to think that when I leave the garage, and that when it, in the middle of the night, it may talk to the other fishing poles. And it'll just say, hey.
Share
the
toy story of
yeah. We counted 16 different species of freshwater fish that it's caught in its career, and there really isn't much it hasn't seen.
Yeah.
So maybe some of these other items, because you say, hey, by the way, you remember that time and that day in the lake when we got this and this? Here's what you do. You know, like staying after the game to talk ball a little bit.
Well,
you know,
what was the final straw on this?
Oh, the whole, it's, I'll show
the mechanism
it
is crippled.
It's,
oh, okay. So it actually is broken.
It's done.
Okay.
It's done. You can't really attach it. I could duct tape a reel to it at this point.
I told him to take a picture of it. And have a hard copy of the picture. Your kids will want that picture of dad and his favorite.
Yeah, him with the pole. Yeah.
Yeah. No, see, my wife now being a professional organizer. So Squared Away Organizing, by the way, squaredawayorganizing.com. And she's really good at that and helps you like lose the emotional attachment. To your point, Lawrence, take a picture and then you've got the picture, and you don't have to keep the item around, which really isn't doing a lot for you.
I have,
it's hard for me to do,
but like, I have pictures of it. It is in pictures with the fish. It's the star of the picture,
right?
But you can see the rod there.
But I'm saying
to you, the rod is
the
star of the picture.
You take a picture that would be on the front of the memorial, like. Like if we were going to a funeral of
the fishing pole,
it would be you and the fishing pole. That's the picture. I mean that they would want.
Yeah, you should have a funeral for it and have a wake, have like an open casket, and just invite people to come by
and just say a Kaddish and then eat some pastrami.
Sure, but use the the embalming fluid. Just shoot it up full of embalming fluid.
That seems a bit aggressive.
A little aggressive.
That's a weird one. That's a tough one for me.
A little aggressive.
I don't challenge a lot of religious beliefs, but the embalming fluid. All right, well, that's a good way to start. Tanny's Open is going
to
get us started.
Yeah,
we'll be fine. We're going to get
we're gonna
this
be good, man.
The best way we can.
I gotta
together.
I got to get Marshall's advice on some stuff. I've never felt worse about the Chicago Cubs this season, so we will start there. Are there two teams more dissimilar in any league of professional sports ever
than the Dodgers and the White Sox?
Oh, I'm looking forward to fleshing that out for you later on in the show. And we'll react to the trade that is kind of still percolating and people are still settling in on that. A lot of discussion today. I need Marshall's professional advice. Looking forward to it. It's Parkins and Spiegel with Spiegs and Marshall Harris today on 670.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show.
If y'all ready, give me a hell yeah.
Oh, hell yeah.
Apparently there is a quintessential Grody and Rhino back and forth. Cannot wait to hear it.
And here it comes. Let's listen.
Hello, Rhino, and welcome into a salute to Sandberg. That's you.
Hey, Mark. Appreciate that. And, you know, you and I go back a little bit, and I gave you a little tidbit early on where my nickname was Sandy. I know that you had a blast with that.
Now
the last 42 years, Rhino, that'll work.
My name is John Johnson, but everyone here calls me Vicky.
I don't know why I get a kick out of the Sandy thing, just because you are Rhino. Before you became this prolific player and Hall of Famer, you were just Sandy from the block, basically.
Through the minor league, it was Sandy, just my last name with a Y at the end of it, so Sandy. And
Sandy,
you won't want to miss this interview with Sandy from the block.
You were just Sandy from the block.
Sandy's his name, if you please.
Let me get on record. I think the statue on Sunday, when revealed, is going to be him playing defense.
Do you have any inside information there?
None. None at all.
For that specifics?
No.
Text Sandy to find out.
Yeah.
There was Jimmy and Tommy and me, and there was Anthony Stabile.
How you doing?
Frankie Carbone. And then there was Sandy.
Hey, Mark. Appreciate that. Sandy.
I don't know why I get a kick out of the Sandy thing.
I'd get a kick out of it.
One, two, three. And here we go. Here we go. Here we go, Jeff. Here we go, Tony.
The Parkins and Spiegel Show. Afternoons from 2 to 6 on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
Oh, so many great reasons to come to work today. And some I didn't even know about. Hearing the great Fred Willard right there, it's part of it. Hearing Tanny graciously throw in my correct prediction of Sandberg on defense with the flip-top glasses as part of the statue, and I'll tell you why on that. That's in there. I understand that we as a show have been granted the intern, Peter Hansen, over the course of the next 2 weeks, but it's a holiday, so we get shorted by 2 days. But there's Peter. Peter, say hello to everybody. Peter, say hello. Introduce yourself, would you, sir? Don't laugh at the producers. Reach for the microphone and respond to the host.
I'm responding.
Look, listen to those tones
hey,
right
this
there.
This is not a play-by-play guy.
Dude,
I've never heard one.
I mean, nailed it. I mean, dynamite drop in, Peter. Dynamite. Did you do summer stock? When you were doing summer stock, did you ever work with a kielbasa? That's a deep reference. If you don't understand it, you can ask those guys afterwards. But Peter, welcome to the show.
Thank you for welcoming me. I'm excited to be here.
All right, that's great.
It's the bass in his voice for me that I clearly am lacking.
It's daunting.
Being old enough to be his father, but yeah.
It's the main reason I was excited to come to work today. I get to hang out with Marshall Harris.
You know what? That's a great reason.
Come on now.
The feeling is mutual. Happy to be here.
Noted sports voice and bon vivant, man about town, Marshall Harris.
You know what? I have not been a man about town, but I'm working on that.
You told me you are living up summertime shy.
I'm actively trying to turn this particular, the summer of 2024 into the summer where I become a man about this town.
All right, do it. You got time.
Trying to hit as many of the 87 neighborhoods as I can in a relatively short period of time.
Hit every bit of the scenic lakefront that you can. Do many of the touristy things that the likes of Shane Reardon will laugh at you for. Because this town is freaking awesome, especially in the summer. And everybody knows it.
I've never minded Shane's laughter at me. I'm used to it.
All right, good. Look, Danny Parkins is not here today. He is playing in Kevin Butler's golf tournament.
What's his handicap?
Danny's handicap? That's a deep-seated issue. He goes to therapy for that. Oh, you mean his golf handicap?
Oh, man. Come on now. Come on. Yes, that's what I was asking. That.
I got to leave the man alone when he's not here.
Okay.
It's something emotionally related. No. His golf handicap. I don't know. Tanny, do you know what his handicap is? It's very good.
I don't know. Yeah, I'm not quite sure.
But he's a plus golfer?
Allegedly.
If average being five, he's above five.
I don't know if he'd ever claim that. I don't know if he's ever bragged about his golfing per se.
What's five?
I don't know what these numbers mean. All I know he's at Kevin Butler's charity golf tournament.
He's at Kevin Butler's charity golf tournament.
I was saying five, like a scale 0 out of 10, which most everyone can agree. I wasn't saying like
the number handicap since we didn't have I was like, next thing I'll go to is, what is he out of 10? Is he a 7.6? Is he a 2.4?
I understand. I don't know. We'll find out. But it's kind of crazy that he's at that former Bears kicker Kevin Butler's charity golf tournament today.
Kevin Butler, who I used to use on Tecmo Bowl, like the original, Tecmo Super Bowl.
I'm with you. That was my game as well.
It is a bit of a weird week, though. I will be out later on in the week. As I told you guys in the meeting, I'm at Chris Gardocki's bowling tournament. So, out of speaks, I don't know if you're going to be
day?
Here all week.
What day is that?
That's Friday.
Oh, that's Friday. Oh, I'm out Friday as well. Oh, I'm at Todd Sauerbrunn's Magic the Gathering Festival.
Oh, wow.
Which is really going to be spectacular. What?
That sounds like a lot that you guys are doing in your extracurricular
time. We are doing a lot. I mean, we're planning out bits.
Look, we don't miss Bears special teamers when they have big functions. We're the special team show.
We do not. I mean, I know you spent a lot of time in Philly. Is Fuad Reves doing something?
I don't know. Listen, Vysikahema.
What's he doing?
He qualifies as special teamer.
Absolutely.
One of the special of the special teamers.
Now you need an off-brand sport charity event.
I'm
going
to go to Vysikahema's Spades tournament.
There we go.
There we go.
Love that.
There we go. By the way, Ron Coomer, delightful man and phenomenal teammate Ron Coomer, once told me about Kirby Puckett's billiards tournament that Coom was a part of.
I could see that.
Oh, can't you?
Yeah.
I can see that something.
It is Coom. And Coom was cleaning up at the pool tournament. It was pool, not billiards, I should say.
So he's a shark.
Coom is a shark and was cleaning up, and a lot of the brothers in attendance at Kirby Puckett's pool tournament were displeased at Ron Coomer cleaning up back in the day.
I would love to see that.
Don't you love that? Oh, man, it'd be phenomenal. So, yeah, no, Danny's not here today. But we have a lot to talk about and a lot to get to, and we're going to right here on 670 The Score. By the way, as always, the Odyssey app is a simple way to listen to our show, Molly Haw, Bernstein, Holmes, everything The Score has to offer right there with the free Odyssey app. Follow 670 The Score in the Odyssey app and take us wherever you may go. And, you know, we're broadcasting live from The Score's Hyundai Studios, brought to you by local Hyundai dealers. Marshall, I have never, ever in this particular season had my confidence and my belief in the Chicago Cubs be lower than what it is right now. It is extremely, extremely low. This is a team in a stretch where they were supposed to make hay. They were 29-29 on the 30th of May after losing 2 of 3 in Milwaukee. They had been exposed right there as clearly inferior to what looked then and still does look like the class of the division, Craig Council's former team, the Brewers. But even at that point, at 29-29, after losing 2 of 3, it's like, okay, they have 25 games in a row coming against teams that are under 500. And they are 21 games into that stretch. Their record is 9-12, Marshall. They're 9-12 in this stretch where they have to make hay. They have 4 left in San Francisco, and then it gets harder again. 6 against the Brewers and the Phillies ending June and beginning July. In July, there are road series at Baltimore. There's a road series at St. Louis, who's now 2 games over 500. There's a road series at Kansas City in July. You know, this was the month and the time for them to make hay. Yes, the calendar says there's still time, but man, they do not look like a good baseball team, and the schedule gave them an opportunity that they have not taken.
Now, I agree with you on your overall sentiment. Like, their record should be better over this stretch so far. But just to add a little bit of context, the teams that are below 500 that they're playing are playing better baseball. So you're running into a Cardinals team that you just mentioned is on the way up, right? And they used the Cubs to do some of that. But the Mets had won 7 of 8 coming into the series.
Absolutely.
So I think it's a couple of things. They are a middling team playing other middling teams, and they're just getting out-middled right now. That's kind of where we are. All these teams hanging around 500. Like, have you seen the wild card standings?
Yeah, man. It's crazy. There's a lot of teams there.
And they're by no means out of the wild card
race. No, there's only 5 teams over 500 in the National League right now. The Cardinals, who I mentioned, have joined the big 4 of Dodgers, Brewers, Braves, and Phillies. So, yeah, no. So they're not remotely mathematically eliminated. I'm not saying they should declare as sellers right now. They don't have to. I'm just saying, some days I've been able to feel confident and feel a sense of belief that they were going to turn this thing around even in the next 4, 5, 6 weeks, and I am not feeling it at all right now, and it's a brutal place to be.
So the inconsistency is key, right? So they have to take 3 or 4 from the Giants. That's like something they have to do. And I don't know if they can. Like, on paper, you would think they could, but that doesn't mean, like, you're clearly you're not confident that they're going to go to San Francisco. And what would you expect them to do against the Giants?
I would expect them to, at the very least, split. And splitting a four-game series on the road should be fine, but that will wrap up your 25-game stint, and you would have gone 11-14, and that's not good enough.
And that's that. Therein lies the problem. It's like the further we get into the season where you're just middling, the less time you have to make a move. And you look at that schedule that's upcoming, specifically the Brewers, and with the Brewers playing the way they are, we just went through all the players that they have that are good in the division. They're not catching the Brewers. Are we ready to say that? They're not catching the Brewers.
No, I'm not. I'm not ready to say anything like that just yet. I mean, it's hard to foresee, but look, if they get hot and then make the ads that they need to make, then there is
time. Well, let me stop you right there.
But it's hard to imagine them doing that. Not to declare on the buyer, seller, good, bad
thing. I got you. I'm just...
It's baseball.
It's hard for me to envision. Trade deadlines when again?
The end of July.
Okay.
July 31.
It's hard for me to imagine with this stretch of games coming up that they're going to do enough to say, yes, invest more in this current team, the 2024 Cubs. You can see why I have that stance, right?
I do.
Now, if they somehow go through this stretch we're talking about, take three or four from the Giants, find a way to make some hay against the Brewers, the Phillies, the other teams that were aforementioned, the Orioles, then okay. What I'm saying is they're not out of time, but the time is running out. And they're in the fourth quarter. Like, I was at the Sky game. They were down 15 in the third quarter. I was like, it looks like it's about over. I was wrong. But you get that sense watching a basketball game just like you get watching a baseball season. You know how many games are left. You know who you got to beat. Not just who you have to beat. You know how many teams are between where you're trying to get to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a bigger factor than maybe how far back you are. It's like, well, how many teams do you have to jump over?
Yeah.
Right now, they got to jump over a bunch of teams, even though they're, what, a game and a half out of a wild card?
Yeah, they got a bunch of teams to jump over and prove that they are better in some lasting way. And it's hard to perceive. Look, phone lines are open if you want to hop in and talk about this at 312-644-6767. I got three or four different reasons I want to kick around with you, Marshall Harris, on why my confidence and belief is at an all-time low. And also, a guy who's been a truth teller on postgame said his truth about this team, and I want people to hear it. So all that is upcoming. It's Parkinson and Spiegel. It's Spiegs and Marshall Harris on the Score.
Afternoons on the Score.
Swanson not being held at first. The 0-2. Strike three called, and the ball game is over. The Mets win the game and win the series. The final tonight, 5-2 New York.
Oh, it's gruesome. You can hear the truth of Pat Hughes' opinion about the team in the tone that that man brings to the play-by-play. Can't you, Marshall?
It's not great.
No.
Because it's accurate, it's authentic, and sometimes that authenticity, it hits like a hammer.
It's a gift to not say this team sucks, but have it in your voice. But it's really a sense of disappointment as much as anything. The Cubs are one of the great disappointments in Major League Baseball as we sit right here. It speaks to Marshall Harris on 670 The Score. And I told you last segment, my confidence, my belief has never been lower on this Cubs team. As of right now, it's still a baseball, so there's time, there's a season to go, there are weeks even before the deadline. But man, it is low right now. Here's Cliff Floyd from the Marquee Local Post game last night, who Cliff is a truth teller and can't help himself, and that is appreciated.
What's frustrating is as soon as the team gets down early and there's a couple runs scored against them, it feels like it's 10-0. It feels like the fight is gone. And you know, when you think about the starting pitching, that's been, you know, the all-star of the first half. You know, they've been tremendous. So very frustrating to watch a team on a really special day come out a little flat.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, with Sandberg, you know, statue and all that, his day. So I don't know. It just seems like every time the team gets down, they sort of feel like they're out of the game, as opposed to what we saw yesterday. Sure. That's the fight that I thought this team was about, and it's just not there consistently.
Damn. That's a dude who played a long time in this league, who does his work, hangs around the team, checks everybody out, reads the body language, tries to, you know, watches the games and decodes what he's seeing. And he just told you that it, right now, as he's watching them, it looks like the fight is gone.
Sometimes you need a little confirmation. And if you've watched the Cubs all season, specifically this past weekend, everything he said, I could see people at home watching him be like, yep, yep, yep. It wasn't like a point was made that you could like argue with. It was just, it does feel like when they get down, especially early, like how would they even pretend to, unless they're playing the White Sox, how would they come back? Like how would they have enough offense and then sustain pitching to come back and win these individual games?
And some of that can happen when the good players even bite you in the butt. When Mark Leiter Jr. in that bullpen, like literally the last dude who's been trustworthy, starts to then fall apart himself. In his last four appearances from Mark Leiter Jr. over 3 1/3 innings, 8 earned runs. And now hurt the right forearm strain. So Luke Little, who went down 2 days ago, was sitting there yesterday as we all entered the clubhouse like, oh, look at that. Luke Little's back. Uh-oh. Who's hurt? And it was Mark Leiter. So that's one of the reasons that I see is like everybody in that bullpen has now shown you vulnerability or they're hurt and they're just freaking gone. It's not just the problem that happens when you don't have a closer you can trust. Now your eighth inning guy that you've been trusting has been bad and is now hurt. You don't. I had Colton Brewer on Hit and Run yesterday morning. I'm like, are you getting this call today if there's a save chance? And he said, I don't know. Could be any of us, which is, you know, okay, great. Could be any of you, but it literally could be any of them.
And it was none of them.
It was none of them because there was no chance. But it's like, who do you trust out there? Everybody's been either hurt or bad and now gone. And it's, oof. When Leiter Jr. is the latest guy, you've got nobody.
Every year when we come to like the halfway point of the season, like between like 75, 85 games, I like to take a look at the standings and say, okay, these are the teams that are doing what we thought they were going to do. You know, the Yankees, you could say the Phillies, they're just good teams. The Orioles, they're good teams.
Yeah, the Braves are a good team. The
Braves are a good
team. Dodgers are a good team.
Yes, you know what you're dealing with, right? And then there's the teams that are doing about what they're supposed to do, but they're not that good. They're just middling. I look up and down the standings right now, and I'm like, who is more disappointing than the Cubs? Maybe teams are on the same tier of disappointment. You could talk about maybe the Blue Jays, the Rays.
The Diamondbacks.
The Diamondbacks, obviously, because of the success they had last year.
Mm-hmm.
But are they more disappointing than the Cubs? I think they're just all in that same bottom tier of disappointing.
Because
the other, like the White Sox and the Marlins, you knew what it was, right? The Rockies, you knew what it was. But to see the teams that are not doing well that you thought would put up a fight, it hurts, man. It hurts for their fan bases to kind of wonder. Now, the beauty of baseball is it's 162 games. Mm-hmm. There is literally plenty of time for them to turn things around, even before the deadline, and get some help.
Yeah,
but if you don't turn it around by a certain point, you ain't nobody coming out that tunnel to help you.
No. And now, like, so the continued bullpen injuries driving me crazy.
Right.
The starting pitching regression. Shota hit hard as hell on Friday. They were late on the adjustment that the rest of the league has now made, at least in that game. I mean, the Mets seeing him for the second time just absolutely destroyed him by sitting on the fastball. How about Javier Assad now? Have loved Javier Assad. But you look at the last seven times he has pitched mm-hmm. as a starter,
yeah.
He's got an ERA over 5. It's a 5.19 ERA, giving up 8 homers and 34 and 2/3. If all of a sudden he's in regression mode, which is what it seems, and Shota can't be, you know, expected to go out and be just a flat-out lights-out stud. I mean, maybe Justin Steele has refound it and reconfigured what he's doing, and that would be good. But starting pitcher regression is a bitch.
Their issue is they need a whole lot of guys to get back to premium level of play, like what they're capable of at the same time. Because so-and-so pitching well and so hitting well and these other guys not, that's not going to get them out of where they are.
Mm.
That is the issue right now with this baseball team.
Yeah. And the last reason that is sitting there for me is the lack of urgency with the call-ups. You know, they all talked such a big game in the spring about how we're going to need,
you know, maybe 40 players. You're going to need all these extra guys, all these guys in the minors. Yeah, but it's like, but it's been Miles Mastroboni again and again. It's been David Bodie again and again. It's been, I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong, they've decided to lean on, and he's showing you offensively just how far away he is from being able to contribute with consistency at the plate. But like rookie production, I thought by now we would have seen either Alexander Canario or Owen Casey or Matt Shaw, who homered twice yesterday. Like, you know, overall, the rookie production, if Michael Bush has been good, he's at this point been their best offensive player, and that's a rookie that they went out and made a trade for.
A good trade.
It seems like it right now, but it's like they were going to need more. And by late June, did not really have any production from any of their own kids who we've been talking up means they're either not good enough or they're not ready or they're waiting. I mean, Council told us last week that it's just not time yet. They're not there yet. So, I don't know if Jed was just kind of waiting to see what this thing looked like before the deadline, but it doesn't look good.
Well, when you say that, like they're waiting and, you know, my thing is, I understand you just listed a whole bunch of players that maybe could help them, right? But some of those guys are going to have to take other people's playing time. I just wonder what the order of, like, trying to get the guys they have on the roster right that they've been put in the lineup versus, okay, now you're secondary and these other guys are going to get more playing time that haven't even come up and done anything yet.
Yeah.
That's a tough balance for a manager to try. I mean, that's his job.
No, but you're on it.
He gets compensated handsomely to do that, but that's a tough – where we are right now in the season, knowing they're within striking distance.
Yeah.
Like, if they were, like, six games out of a wild card, it'd be, I think, a different tenor. Like, okay, we gave you half a season to do something. You haven't done anything yet. You're way below your average production level. We're going to give somebody else a chance at this job.
Yeah.
I don't think they're there yet.
They're not there yet. And, like, when we asked about Casey, Council said, I don't think I could get Owen Casey consistent at bats on this team
so
right
now. That's exactly what I'm saying. How are they? Whose at-bats are they taking away to get consistent at-bats?
I mean, but that's the thing. It's like he doesn't necessarily need to start and play. He doesn't have a spot with those corner outfield spots because those guys are getting paid. And Ian App's been actually pretty good offensively. And Seiya's not a guy that they're going to sit down. He's the one who's expected to be a superstar.
How's that working out?
Yeah, not great, man. Not great. This mix is not a good one right now. Texter's getting into 312-644-6767. A bigger picture issue, too, says a texter, with all these injuries happening, gives Jed a convenient reason not to spend next year either. I don't know. I don't think that that's the way that's going to get looked at. But look, your frustration, people's frustration, is completely and thoroughly understandable. It is 670. The Score. He's Marshall Harris. I'm Matt Spiegel. I need his advice a little bit later on. But when we come back, is tonight the most lopsided matchup of pro sports organizations currently possible? We'll talk about it next on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spunks puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
Afternoons on The Score.
Swanson not being held at first, the 0-2. Strike three called and the ball game is over. The Mets win the game and win the series. The final tonight, 5-2 New York.
Oh, it's gruesome. You can hear the truth of Pat Hughes' opinion about the team in the tone that that man brings to the play-by-play. Can't you, Marshall?
It's not great.
No.
Because it's accurate, it's authentic, and sometimes that authenticity, it hits like a hammer.
It's a gift to not say this team sucks, but have it in your voice. But it's really a sense of disappointment as much as anything. The Cubs are one of the great disappointments in Major League Baseball.
as we sit right here. It's Spiegs and Marshall Harris on 670 The Score. And I told you last segment, my confidence, my belief has never been lower on this Cubs team. As of right now, it's still a baseball, so there's time, there's a season to go, there are weeks even before the deadline, but man, it is low right now. Here's Cliff Floyd from the Marquee Local Post game last night, who Cliff is a truth teller and can't help himself, and that is appreciated.
What's frustrating is as soon as the team gets down early and there's a couple runs scored against them, it feels like it's 10-0. It feels like the fight is gone. And you know, when you think about the starting pitching, that's been, you know, the all-star of the first half. You know, they've been tremendous. So very frustrating to watch a team on a really special day come out a little flat.
Yeah.
As far as, you know, with Sandberg, you know, statue and all that, his day. So I don't know. It just seems like every time the team gets down, they sort of feel like they're out of the game, as opposed to what we saw yesterday. Sure. That's the fight that I thought this team was about, and it's just not there consistently.
Damn. That's a dude who played a long time in this league, who does his work, hangs around the team, checks everybody out, reads the body language, tries to, you know, watches the games and decodes what he's seeing. And he just told you that it, right now, as he's watching them, it looks like the fight is gone.
Sometimes you need a little confirmation. And if you've watched the Cubs all season, specifically this past weekend, everything he said, I could see people at home watching him be like, yep. It wasn't like a point was made that you could like argue with. It was just, it does feel like when they get down, especially early, like how would they even pretend to, unless they're playing the White Sox, how would they come back? Like how would they have enough offense and then sustain pitching to come back and win these individual games?
And some of that can happen when the good players even bite you in the butt. When Mark Leiter Jr. in that bullpen, like literally the last dude who's been trustworthy starts to then fall apart himself. In his last four appearances from Mark Leiter Jr. over 3 1/3 innings, 8 earned runs. And now hurt the right forearm strain. So Luke Little, who went down 2 days ago, was sitting there yesterday as we all entered the clubhouse like, oh, look at that. Luke Little's back. Uh-oh. Who's hurt? And it was Mark Leiter. So that's one of the reasons that I see is like, everybody in that bullpen has now shown you vulnerability, or they're hurt and they're just freaking gone. It's not just the problem that happens when you don't have a closer you can trust. Now your eighth inning guy that you've been trusting has been bad and is now hurt. You don't. I had Colton Brewer on Hit and Run yesterday morning. I'm like, are you getting this call today if there's a safe chance? And he said, I don't know. Could be any of us, which is, you know, okay, great. Could be any of you, but it literally could be any of them.
And it was none of them.
It was none of them because there was no chance. But it's like, who do you trust out there? Everybody's been either hurt or bad and now gone. And it's, oof. When Leiter Jr. is the latest guy, you've got nobody.
Every year when we come to like the halfway point of the season, like between like 75, 85 games, I like to take a look at the standings and say, okay, these are the teams that are doing what we thought they were going to do. You know, the Yankees, you could say the Phillies, they're just good teams. The Orioles, they're good teams.
Yeah, the Braves are a good team. The
Braves are a good
team. Dodgers are a good team.
Yes, you know what you're dealing with, right? And then there's the teams that are doing about what they're supposed to do, but they're not that good. They're just middling. I look up and down the standings right now, and I'm like, who is more disappointing than the Cubs? Maybe teams are on the same tier of disappointment. You could talk about maybe the Blue Jays, the Rays.
The Diamondbacks.
The Diamondbacks, obviously, because of the success they had last year.
Mm-hmm.
But are they more disappointing than the Cubs? I think they're just all in that same bottom tier of disappointing.
Because
the other, like the White Sox and the Marlins, you knew what it was, right? The Rockies, you knew what it was. But to see the teams that are not doing well, that you thought would put up a fight, it hurts, man. It hurts for their fan bases to kind of wonder. Now, the beauty of baseball is it's 162 games. Mm-hmm. There is literally plenty of time for them to turn things around, even before the deadline, and get some help.
Yeah,
but if you don't turn it around by a certain point, you ain't nobody coming out that tunnel to help you.
No. And now, like, so the continued bullpen injuries drive me crazy.
Right.
The starting pitching regression. Shota hit hard as hell on Friday. They were late on the adjustment that the rest of the league has now made, at least in that game. I mean, the Mets seeing him for the second time just absolutely destroyed him by sitting on the fastball. How about Javier Assad now? Have loved Javier Assad. But you look at the last seven times he has pitched as a starter, he's got an ERA over five. It's a 5.19 ERA, giving up eight homers and 34 and two-thirds. If all of a sudden he's in regression mode, which is what it seems, and Shota can't be, you know, expected to go out and be just a flat-out lights-out stud. I mean, maybe Justin Steele has refound it and reconfigured what he's doing, and that would be good. But starting pitcher regression is a bitch.
Their issue is they need a whole lot of guys to get back to premium level of play, like what they're capable of at the same time. Because so-and-so pitching well and so hitting well and these other guys not, that's not going to get them out of where they are. Hmm. That is the issue right now with this baseball team.
Yeah. And the last reason that is sitting there for me is the lack of urgency with the call-ups. You know, they all talked such a big game in the spring about how we're going to need, you know, maybe 40 players. We're going to need all these extra guys, all these guys in the minors. Yeah, but it's like, but it's been Miles Mastroboni again and again. It's been David Bodie again and again. It's been, I mean, Pete Crow Armstrong, they've decided to lean on, and he's showing you offensively just how far away he is from being able to contribute with consistency at the plate. But like rookie production, I thought by now we would have seen either Alexander Canario or Owen Casey or Matt Shaw, who homered twice yesterday. Like, you know, overall, the rookie production, if Michael Bush has been good. He's at this point been their best offensive player, and that's a rookie that they went out and made a trade for.
A good trade.
It seems like it right now, but it's like they were going to need more. And by late June, did not really have any production from any of their own kids we've been talking up means they're either not good enough or they're not ready or they're waiting. I mean, Council told us last week that it's just not time yet. They're not there yet. So, I don't know if Jed was just kind of waiting to see what this thing looked like before the deadline, it doesn't look good.
Well, when you say that, like they're waiting and, you know, my thing is, I understand you just listed a whole bunch of players that maybe could help them, right? But some of those guys are going to have to take other people's playing time. I just wonder what the order of like trying to get the guys they have on the roster right that they've been putting in the lineup versus, okay, now you're secondary and these other guys are going to get more playing time that haven't even come up and done anything yet.
Yeah.
That's a tough balance for a manager to try. I mean, that's his job.
No, but you're on it.
He gets compensated handsomely to do that, but that's a tough where we are right now in the season, knowing they're within striking distance.
Yeah.
Like if they were like six games out of a wild card, it'd be, I think, a different tenor. Like, okay, we gave you half a season to do something. You haven't done anything yet. You're way below your average production level. We're going to give somebody else a chance at this job.
Yeah.
I don't think they're there yet.
They're not there yet. And like when we asked about Casey, Council said, I don't think I could get Owen Casey consistent at bats on this team
so
right
now. That's exactly what I'm saying. How are they? Whose at bats are they taking away to get consistent at bats?
I mean, but that's the thing. It's like he doesn't necessarily need to start and play. He doesn't have a spot with those corner outfield spots because those guys are getting paid. And Ian Happ's been actually pretty good offensively. And Seiya's not a guy that they're going to sit down. He's the one who's expected to be a superstar.
How's that working out?
Yeah, not great, man. Not great. This mix is not a good one right now. Texter's getting into 312-644-6767. A bigger picture issue, too, says a texter, with all these injuries happening, gives Jed a convenient reason not to spend next year either. I don't know. I don't think that that's the way that's going to get looked at. But look, your frustration, people's frustration, is completely and thoroughly understandable. It is 670. The Score. He's Marshall Harris. I'm Matt Spiegel. I need his advice a little bit later on. But when we come back, is tonight the most lopsided matchup of pro sports organizations currently possible? We'll talk about it next on The Score.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare. The hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. and thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at MyBob's.com to play now.